Right now, your legacy billing engine might be silently throwing away $15,000 a month in perfectly good subscription revenue.
Yeah, and the crazy part is you are not getting an error code.
Right, exactly. Your dashboard looks completely green, everything looks fine, but you are losing that money simply because, a developer left one single data field blank on a background API call.
It is a massive oversight.
It really is. So, welcome to another MyPayAdvisor deep dive. If you are a US merchant and you are processing between $25,000 and $5 million in monthly volume, well, this conversation is built directly for you.
Yes, it is.
Today, we are tearing apart the Tokenization for Higher Approval Rates 2026 Operator Guide.
And we really have to anchor this right away to your 2026 cost and rate ranges.
Yeah, let us give them the baseline.
Right. Before we even look at the mechanics of this, you need the financial baseline. For 2026, network token provisioning and storage fees should be $0, period.
$0.
Exactly. On the processing side, a properly executed network token strategy qualifies you for 5 to 15 basis points lower interchange fees.
And that is not just a made-up number, right?
No, not at all. That discount is published directly on the Visa interchange reimbursement fees schedule and the MasterCard interchange rates tables.
Okay, so just to be super clear here, the baseline is $0 for storage plus a literal discount on interchange.
Yes.
So if a processor is handing you a contract, charging 5 to 7 cents per token provisioning call, you are in a bad contract from day one.
Correct. I mean, you are paying for a service that should be bundled. And worse than that, you are missing out on the interchange discount completely.
Wow.
Yeah, that 2 to 6% lift in authorization rates reported by Visa and MasterCard, well, that goes straight to your bottom line. But you have to buy the right technology to actually capture it.
Okay, hold on though. I see the word tokenization included on like almost every processor pricing page out there. Are you saying they're legally allowed to call two completely different technologies by the exact same name?
Yes. And that is exactly where the trap begins.
Seriously.
Yeah. Processors use tokenization as a blanket term for two very distinct architectures. The first one is vault tokenization.
Okay, vault tokenization. What is that?
This was originally created just as a security control for PCI compliance.
Right.
When a customer gives you their credit card, your gateway takes that primary account number, stores it in their secure database vault, and then they give you back a random string of characters.
Okay, so the raw 16-digit card number never touches your own servers.
Exactly. Every time you charge that customer, you just send the random string.
Which is great for security, obviously. I mean, it keeps you out of the scope of a massive PCI audit. You do not have to worry about storing toxic data.
It is great for security, but it does nothing for your approval rates.
Nothing at all.
Nothing. Here is the mechanism behind it. At the exact moment of authorization, your processor takes that random string, looks up the real 16-digit card number in their vault, and then they submit that raw card number to the payment network.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so the issuing bank sees the exact same transaction they would have seen 10 years ago.
Okay, so vault tokenization is essentially, it is like a coat check for a credit card.
A coat check. I like that.
Yeah, like it keeps the card secure in the back room, but you just get a claim ticket. You still have to give the ticket back to the attendant to get the actual coat before you leave.
That is a perfect analogy. You are protecting the data at rest, sure, but the transaction itself has not changed at all.
Got it. What is network tokenization then? Because if vault tokenization is a coat check, network tokenization sounds like, well, it sounds like the bank handing you a VIP pass.
It is a VIP pass.
Really?
Yeah. Network tokenization changes the entire authorization process. Programs like the Visa Token Service and the MasterCard Digital Enablement Service sit right between your processor and the issuing bank.
Okay.
So when a card is saved, the network requests a token directly from the issuer, and then the issuer returns a domain-restricted token that is bound specifically to your merchant ID.
Bound to your merchant ID. So it only works for your specific store.
Right. Think about what that means. If a hacker breaches your system and steals that token, they cannot go buy a television on another website.
Because it only works for your merchant account.
Exactly. The token is completely useless to them. This is such a fundamental shift in the architecture that, the Federal Reserve Payment System's documentation actually classifies these network tokens as an entirely separate credential type from the original funding card number.
Wow. Okay, so how does a merchant actually verify which one they have? Because, like we said, the sales brochure is just going to say tokenization.
You look at the transacting phase. Network tokenization requires a one-time cryptogram on every single charge.
Let us slow down there. A cryptogram. What is a cryptogram in this context?
It is a unique cryptographic signature generated for that specific transaction.
Okay.
Your processor has to request it from the network right before they hit the authorization button. That cryptogram proves to the issuing bank that the request is legitimate and comes from you, the verified merchant.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, without that cryptogram, it is simply not a network token transaction.
Now, if network tokens are this highly secure VIP pass, does the bank actually reward you for using them? Let us look at the actual margin here.
You should.
Because the 2026 operator guide breaks down a case study for a subscription box merchant. And the math here, the math is what really caught my attention.
Yes. Let us look at the real numbers. This is a business-to-consumer merchant selling physical goods on a monthly subscription. They process $800,000 in monthly volume.
Okay, $800,000.
Right. Their average ticket is $89, and their current authorization rate is sitting at 88.4%.
Okay, so over 90% of their attempted charges are run on cards they already have on file. That heavy recurring billing.
Very heavy.
So where does the actual financial lift come from?
We have to look at their decline codes over the past 90 days. The first big one is decline code 54. That stands for expired card.
Oh, yeah.
For this specific merchant, code 54 makes up 3.1% of all their declines.
Reason code 54 is just incredibly painful for subscription merchants. Your customers, you know, they do not usually call you to update their expiration date.
No, never.
They just let the box fail, and then maybe they churn out completely.
That is the standard experience, for sure. But with network tokenization, that entire category of declines almost completely vanishes.
Wait, really? How?
Because when a card expires, or if it is lost and replaced by the customer, the issuing bank updates the card number behind the token automatically.
Automatically. So you do not have to do anything.
You do not have to ask the customer for a new card at all. You just run the token like you normally would, and the issuer maps it to the new account number on their end.
Wow. So the token stays exactly the same on my end, but the funding source behind it gets refreshed by the bank in the background?
Exactly.
That means that 3.1% is instantly recovered volume.
Yes, it is.
But what about the borderline declines where the bank just is not sure if it is fraud or not? But
that brings us to decline code AO5. Which is do not honor.
Right, do not honor.
This is a generic decline code that banks use when their fraud models find something slightly suspicious. For this merchant, code 05 was 4.2% of their attempts.
So does the VIP pass actually help with a generic do not honor code?
Yes, it does. Visa has published guidance showing that issuers approve these borderline declines at much higher rates when a valid cryptogram is present.
Because of the trust.
Right. Remember, the cryptogram proves the transaction is highly secure and requested by a verified merchant. Because of that added trust, this merchant sees an additional 1.3 percentage points of lift just from fewer code 05 declines.
Okay, let us run those numbers and actually see what it means for the business. You recover the expired cards and you save a large chunk of the do not honor declines.
Right.
For this specific merchant doing $800,000 a month, they recover between $326,400 and $393,600 in annualized gross volume.
And that is gross volume they would have otherwise just lost to churn or failed billing cycle.
Yeah. And here is the real aha moment for me. If we net that out against their 2.9% processing rate, that equals $14,500 to $17,500 per month in net operating contribution.
Every single month.
Every month. You are essentially finding over $14,000 a month hidden in your own decline codes.
It goes straight to the bottom line just for routing the transaction differently.
Okay, well, I have to push back here.
Go for it.
Because if I can add $14,000 a month to my bottom line just by routing things differently, why is not every single merchant running at a 92% approval rate right now? I mean, what is the catch?
The catch is that the math only works if your technical integration is flawless.
And flawless is rare.
In the payment processing world, flawless is extremely rare. There are four distinct places where operators get trapped and the return on investment just dies.
Okay, let us start with the first one, per token fees.
Yes. Some processors view network tokenization as a brand new revenue stream.
Of course they do.
Right. They will charge you 5 to 7 cents per token provisioning call, plus a fractional cent every single time you request a cryptogram.
Wow. So if you have 12,000 monthly card on file customers and you bill them multiple times a month, you can spend thousands of dollars a year just on infrastructure fees.
Easily. And if your approval lift is only marginal, those fees eat the profit entirely.
So you really have to negotiate token provisioning into your flat gateway fee or mandate $0 per cryptogram call right in the contract?
Yes, you have to get it in writing.
Okay, what is the second trap?
The second issue is what we talked about earlier, vault tokenization being sold as network tokenization.
Ah, the coat check being sold as the VIP pass.
Exactly. Sales reps blur the lines constantly. You sign a contract that says tokenization included. But when your developers actually look at the API documentation, it only references the processor's own PCI vault.
So you think you are getting the VIP pass, but they are just checking your code.
Exactly. You will never see that 2 to 6% lift because the issuer is still just seeing raw card numbers.
That is so frustrating. But that actually brings up a bigger issue with vendors. What happens when you want to leave?
Oh, this is a big one.
Right, because if I have all these network tokens with processor A, and I want to move to processor B for a better rate, do I get to take my tokens with me?
This is the third trap, vendor lock-in.
Vendor lock-in, okay.
Network tokens are bound to a token requester ID. Your processor is the registered token requester.
Okay.
If you decide to switch providers, you need your old processor to port those tokens to your new processor.
And do they?
Many of them refuse outright.
You are kidding!
No. If they will not port the tokens, all of those network tokens die the minute you close your account. You have to ask all your customers for their credit cards again.
That is insane. That is like a software company holding your entire customer database hostage until you renew your contract.
It is exactly like that.
The Nielsen report actually has extensive coverage on processor switching costs. They flag token lock-in as a top three reason merchants stay on overpriced gateways. You just get stuck.
You do get stuck. And processors know this. It is a very intentional retention tactic.
Wow.
Which brings us to the fourth trap. And this is the silent killer we mentioned right at the start in the deep dive.
Right. Subscription billing without a cryptogram?
Yes.
Wait, this is the $15,000 mistake. Explain how a merchant could pay the setup fees, do the migration, and see 0% lift just because of a billing engine.
Okay, so let us say you navigate the fees, you get real network tokens, and you ensure portability. You do the whole migration.
Okay, doing everything right so far.
But then your recurring billing engine submits the token to the gateway without a fresh cryptogram.
Okay, why does that matter so much?
Because the cryptogram and the token must go into the ISO 8583 authorization message in very specific fields.
The ISO 8583.
Right. That is the International Standard for Financial Transaction Messaging. The token goes into field 2. The expiration data goes into field 14. And the cryptogram goes into field 55.
Field 55.
Yes. If field 55 is empty, the strategy fails silently.
Fails silently. So I'm staring at my dashboard, the transaction goes through, but I do not get an error code telling me I missed a field.
No error code at all.
Wow.
The issuing bank simply sees a token without a cryptogram. So they assume it is just a legacy card on file transaction, and they treat it with the standard lower level of trust.
That is brutal.
You get zero lift, and you never know why.
How does that actually happen, though? Like, why would a developer just leave Field 55 blank?
It happens because legacy recurring billing engines were often built before network tokens even existed.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, your development team sets up the billing software years ago. It works fine for regular credit cards. Then when you switch to network tokens on the gateway side, nobody realizes the old billing software needs an update.
So it just does not actively fetch and pass that cryptogram into field 55 before every charge.
Exactly.
Okay, well, you do not need to write the code yourself, but you definitely need to know exactly what question to ask your lead developer to ensure this is not happening.
Precisely.
Let us bring this down to the operator level then. What do we actually do with all this information? We know the math, we know the traps. Give us the playbook to execute this week.
The operator playbook has 5 specific action items.
Let's hear them.
First, pull a 90-day authorization report from your gateway. You need to group your declines by reason code.
Okay.
Sum up reason codes 05, 14, 51, 54, 65, and 91.
Those specific codes?
Yes. These are the categories that network tokens actually help recover.
And what is the benchmark we are looking for there?
If the total of those specific reason codes is above 4% of your overall attempts, the math will work in your favor. It is time to migrate.
Okay, step 2.
Second, email your processor and ask for their registered token requester ID in writing.
In writing.
Do not accept a phone call. Do not accept a marketing brochure. Ask them directly if they are a registered token requester with Visa Token Service and MasterCard Digital Enablement Service.
What if they hedge? Like, what if they say they offer PCI compliant tokenization and try to pivot the conversation?
They hedge because giving up that ID proves they do not actually have a direct line to FISA, and they know it ruins their margin.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, when they try to pivot the conversation to PCI compliance, that is your red flag. They are selling you vault tokens.
That makes perfect sense. Step three is about protecting your future leverage when negotiating rates.
Yes. Yeah. Third, demand a token portability clause in your contract.
To avoid that lock-in.
Right. You need a written commitment that they will participate in a portability request if you ever decide to leave. Both Visa and MasterCard fully support portability between certified requesters.
So there's no technical reason they cannot do it?
None. The only reason a processor refuses is to trap you. Do not sign without that clause.
Good advice. Yeah. Okay, step four is the technical audit. How do we check field 55 without needing a computer science degree?
Fourth, ask your processor to pull the raw ISO 8583 messages for 20 random subscription charges from your account.
Just 20 random ones.
Yeah. You want to audit the raw data? Look at field 55. Is there a cryptogram in it? Then look at field 2. Is it the token or is it the original card number? This is the single highest value sanity check you can perform to make sure your billing engine is actually doing the work.
Trust but verify the data fields. That is a great management check. And the final step.
Fifth, check your monthly statement to ensure your tokenized volume is actually hitting the secure rate.
The discount we talked about.
Exactly. Remember, the Visa and MasterCard schedules give you a discount. Tokenized volume should clear at 5 to 15 basis points lower than the standard rate.
Okay.
If your processor is keeping that margin for themselves, you need to have a very direct conversation with your account manager.
That is a highly practical playbook. Pull the report, get the requester ID in writing, demand portability audit field 55, and verify your interchange discount.
That is it.
If you do those five things, you isolate the upside and eliminate the traps.
Exactly. But before we wrap up today, we really need to look at the security implications of this shift.
Oh, definitely.
We've spent this whole conversation talking about approval rates, operating margins, and basis points. But optimizing for approval rates today is quietly becoming a massive defense mechanism.
This ties into the recent numbers from the Nilson report, right?
Yes, it does. The Nilson report states that $0.14 billion was lost to payment card fraud worldwide in 2023.
Wow.
And 0.19% of those losses occurred right here in the U.S.
That is a staggering amount of capital just evaporating from the ecosystem.
Uh-huh.
And it is not slowing down either. The Nilson report projects $1.71 billion in worldwide losses over the next 10 years.
$1.71 billion.
Yeah.
This brings us back to the fundamental architecture of network tokens. Because they are domain restricted to your specific merchant ID, and because they require a single-use cryptogram for every single authorization, well, a stolen network token is completely worthless to a hacker.
They just cannot do anything with it.
Exactly. They cannot take it to another website. They cannot reuse an old cryptogram. It fundamentally devalues the data resting in your systems.
And hackers do not want to steal data they cannot monetize.
Precisely.
We started this deep dive focused on finding operating margin hidden in decline codes. We looked at how updating a card automatically saves a subscription cycle.
Right.
But look at where the industry is heading with these projected fraud losses. Could migrating to network tokens for the margin bump today actually be the single best move you make to protect your business from the next decade of digital fraud?
It is a very real possibility.
Think about that as you pull your authorization reports this week. We will see you on the next deep dive.